Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And we are, with your help, reclaiming the Republic. As we go through the term of the Biden administration, I am finding more and more people are recognizing that if we don't do things, if we don't take the matters into our own hands, it is not going to happen. I'm hoping people are starting to realize that even if Trump, even if James Madison became the president in the next election, he cannot and will not get the problem fixed. It requires the states. Therefore, it requires the people, the good citizens of the sovereign states, to get the states to do their job. This show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that goes through, and I really mean that, because I unfortunately have to suffer through listening to conservative entertainers all the time, and it infuriates me. I'm going to damage my vehicle. I'm going to damage my hands by punching the windows, the doors, and because of the frustration I constantly obtain. There we go. I'm finally getting to a frustration level where I just can't take the lunacy anymore. When people do not understand the Constitution, and I'm not talking about the quote-unquote academic understanding of the Constitution as known today, like by Hillsdale College. You take Hillsdale College courses, you will not understand what needs to be done. You may have a good historical perspective of certain parts of the Constitution, but they will not teach you, they do not teach you, that only the militia has the authority to execute the laws of the Union, still in accordance with the Constitution. It has never been modified. They do not teach you the absolute requirement of amending the Constitution for the federal government to be able to do anything different than what is written in that document. The Hillsdale College, in essence, is embracing the annotated Constitution. But they're teaching you the conservative view of it. And, oh, well, they think that's a badge of honor. And they proudly tell you that they are going to give you a conservative education. But who cares? What we need is an actual understanding of the Constitution. It's almost like the Catholic Church in the Dark Ages, when they were withholding text, when they were withholding scriptures, when they were manipulating and guiding the people in behaving the way they wanted them to. Please understand this, folks. Until Martin Luther and until King James actually broke away, not King James, I think it was King Henry, whoever founded the Episcopal Church, I'm pretty sure it was the king that wanted the divorce and broke away. You have to understand that at that point in time, when the first king, the first monarch, broke away from the Catholic Church, that was a huge paradigm shift. It was a huge epoch, because it was the beginning of the end of the church-state collusion. How were kings created? How did a person become the king of a kingdom? He had to be coronated. Who coronated them? The Catholic Church. The Roman Catholic Church coronated all the kings of Europe until they started breaking away and started losing their control. And so, as you understand, they had a good run. I mean, if you look at the Roman Empire, when it ended, when supposedly all of the world was not controlled out of Italy and out of Rome, and it started shifting to where the people had different rights and different governments, the beginning of all of that was the turning towards enlightenment, because people started realizing that those people up in the north, their needs for government were different, and therefore they changed their paradigms to not suit the emperor, the Caesar, the king of Rome, and actually said, we need our own king. It was a very slow evolution. But the point is that we're living in a time where we've got organizations and institutions that are claiming to be, you know, really constitutionally literate. There are some good ones, and there are some that actually go through it. But until they start teaching what is being discussed regarding the Constitution, until they start teaching the ratification debate's view of the Constitution, they're missing it. They are missing it. And I hope if you missed my ratification debate reading, or if you want to call it the seminar, it was almost 2 months. I think it went from, it started on the 29th of March, and we went all the way to the 27th of May, almost two whole months. So there you go. If you want to start understanding the Constitution, quit spending money on Hillsdale. I do not endorse, anybody that is endorsing Hillsdale is endorsing half-truths and not really teaching you, because they don't want you, either they don't want you, or they're just absolutely that blind and ignorant. How can somebody reject the concept of the ratification debates by reading them? Okay, there are 1,000-some pages. Hey, the Federalist Papers, in the same context, the Federalist Papers are over 700. I know there's a little more white space and that type of thing in the Federalist Papers, but still, my point is why would they cling to these documents that may be insightful, these Federalist Papers, but all they were articles that were ran in a newspaper. They had no legal standing. They weren't bearing testimony to the delegates who were all under oath into doing what they were supposed to do in defining and determining what this Constitution really meant and ratifying it during the ratification debate. So that's why I keep pointing to how special these are. These are legally binding documents. You cannot separate the ratification debates from the Constitution. It's the same thing as taking the Ten Commandments and separating it from the Scriptures and saying there's no relationship. We're in denial. And so we need you to help start getting this paradigm shift going. And this is how it begins. It begins with that boom, that wake-up call. Now, one more thing that I need to add into this. A long time ago, I had an interview. I actually played that interview not too long ago. I believe it was March when I played the interview with Dr. Weil, who is a constitutional professor. This guy, he knows more about the history of the Constitution, some of those things, better than I do in some respects. He doesn't probably know the ratification debates better than I do, but he understands them really good, and we can argue, we can talk about them and go through them. But he probably couldn't cite them days and who said and what have you. He probably would. This guy is smart. He's written over 40 books on the Constitution. Dr. John R. Weil out of Middle Tennessee University. He's a good man. But my point is that even when I played that interview for you and you listened to what he says, you will understand that there is no desire for people to connect these dots for you, because they understand that there's money on the line. His institution would lose federal funding. So when you start, you know, looking at why and who, you have to look a little bit deeper. 9 times out of 10, you're going to find that money is one of the issues. Control is another issue. It is the same typical issues that have been the downfall or the perversions of governments, churches, institutions, families, and people. It is the desire for that money. It's a desire for that control, that power. And so as we kind of look at the Dark Ages, this helps, as far as I'm concerned, this helps actually assert the importance of canonizing the Constitution in marrying the ratification debates actually to that document. Again, Madison and Jefferson in their day did not have the same level of maturity with contract law. Back then, a handshake was good, and as long as people abided by the contract, everything was fine. But we have advanced to a level, and we have the technology to do it. It's almost like voting. We have the technology to ensure that people that don't have skin in the game shouldn't be voting. Like, if you're not a property owner, you should not be able to vote on whether we have property taxes or not. And as a matter of fact, if we believe in representation, the sovereigns, who are sovereigns? It's not just we the people. It is the property owners. We have to start understanding sovereignty to the different tiers and levels. Okay, you're a sovereign of yourself. Are you a sovereign over your property? Okay, you own a car. You own this, you own that. So you should be able to, if you own a car, you should be able to vote on any issue that is going to affect, you know, car issues like your registration. In Washington State, they've repealed, and they're trying to do it again, repealing all of the licensing fees to take it back to $35 for your tags for your vehicle, because the state has been typically adding, and next thing you know, you're paying $1,000 to put tags on your car because they're using that as a form of revenue. And the people stand up and say, no, we're not going to have that. Well, so if you own a car, you should be able to vote in that issue or that matter. If you own property, you should be able to vote, even if you don't live in that county. Now, I know, and I've worked with people that own businesses in a county that they can't vote. Well, how fair is that? They've got a bunch of people, because 9 times out of 10, there may be a lot of people, and you're going, wow, you know, if all of a sudden the property owners, if they could vote in those counties to represent their property, to protect the cost of their property and protect those tenants that are renting from them to have to pay more, well, isn't that a good thing? But the tenants, if they don't own property, they shouldn't be able to vote in it. Anyway, we got a heartbreak. We'll be right back, and we're going to get into the notes on nullification, but I've got a couple things to tell you. We'll be right back after this. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me just try to wrap this up, because I really want to get into these notes on nullification. The most important thing that I really want to hit up and drive home is the need for canonizing the Constitution, period. There are all sorts of reasons why, but if you really want to understand and put the Constitution back into the true context that the framers framed it during the ratification debates, this is why the ratification debates are that important. Now, in my writing and in my work over this, from the very beginning, when I started out to write my first book, I wanted to write that book so that, one, it was academically irrefutable, And so I didn't worry about dumbing it down to a sixth grader level, because that would have taken me more time, more work, more pages and so forth, because there's a lot of meat in that first book. Now, I tried not to use non-official documents when I write my academic papers. My books are basically academic textbooks, but I include a lot of different sources. But when I write my papers and when I do my research and my argument, I've always tried to use source documents that are official source documents. Why and what is different? And this goes back to that interview with Dr. Vile again. When I was talking to Dr. Vile, he brought up points that Madison started favoring in the end of his life. After the notes on nullification, he made this assertion that Madison wanted the judiciary to basically start settling matters. Well, as I told the good doctor, well, that may be nice and that may be an opinion, but that was not Madison's official, in official capacity as the president, saying that they should be doing that. As a matter of fact, in every instance in his official capacity, he actually pointed to the constitutional processes. I can't think of a time where he actually violated the constitutional processes. Even when he called for the nation of prayer, some of those things he actually pulled back because he felt he was overstepping the bounds of the, you know, asking people to pray or anything like that. He was very, very sensitive about staying within the framework of the Constitution. Now, here's my point. The notes on nullification are technically not an official capacity. However, as the father of the Constitution and as the as a man sitting down and conversing or sending these notes out to different people and just basically consolidating his communications with James Monroe and others, I have in the past not really included this. As a matter of fact, if you go online and you read my argument for nullification versus interposition or Republic Review, you'll notice that I don't even cite this. I don't even bring up any of this. And understanding how Madison really does emphatically support this, as I've initially read this, I go, this is good, but it's not official. So I've been dismissive of this. That's changed. Just due to the fact that the desperation of the anti-conventionites, those organizations that are calling for nullification over interposition or not supporting Republic Review, and we know who some of those organizations are. So the Eagle Forum actually does not support Republic Review, but they do call for nullification because they've counted on the John Birch Society to know what they're talking about, or other people. And so they've been following lockstep with, you know, okay, yeah, that's the better way, that because they do recognize the problems and the danger in a convention of states, especially when it's a private entity that is calling for it. It's one thing if it's the actual people at the state level, not people that are engaged and associated with a grassroots activist organization like the Convention of States. No, it's one thing when you actually have people that are, you know, sharing a concept, let's just say term limits. But the problem is, and I think every politician will understand, that term limits do not fix the problem of bad government behavior. That has nothing to do with it. It only basically punishes the people from being able to have good representation. Term limits forces the people, the electorate, to get rid of people like James Madison. Here's a guy that contributed his life to the Constitution and the governing of people. Instead of trying to become a baron of industry, to become a rich man, here's a man that dedicated his life to public service. And so you want to basically say, well, but that's not what we want. We don't want people to do that. Really? I'm telling you, we do need to compensate public servants better, especially, you know, in the legislative or the sovereignty side, those who actually create the laws. We need to treat them better because they're the ones that actually are supposed to, so they need to be writing these laws, not these unconstitutional bureaucrats and so forth. But anyway, as I started going down this path of non-official documents, bringing this in, you know, I've been familiar with this, and I've actually read through the notes on nullification, but I'm going to tell you, this is the first time I've started, like the Bible, at, you know, verse 1 of Matthew and gone to the last verse of Revelations and said, okay, I finished the New Testament. So this is really the first time I've actually sat down, because what I'd done in the past is I kind of look at and I would read and, you know, in little snippets, a paragraph, a page and a half or something like that. And one of the things I've discovered is, even though I've known that Madison's positions were solid, that he basically points to the states. At the very beginning of this, I told you, he points to the states. What I didn't really realize is he actually took arguments and actually stood like he was debating himself and created this argument for nullification, created these arguments. So it kind of, if you just take a snippet, if you take a small portion of this document, you could actually create a couple paragraphs or what have you that would might actually seem like Madison is supporting nullification. When you read this entire document, you will realize that he is basically saying nullification may be a right, but it is your last ultimate right, and it will end this union and constitution. And understanding that, we're far more obligated. We are far more vested, and I would just say, you know, the impetus, it is paramount that we do everything we can to save this Constitution. And just like the framers of old, just like when they created this Constitution and they created liberty, this being the land of liberty, the footstool for the Lord in liberty. And as you understand and how I look at liberty and the intricacies and the symbiotic relationship with the gospel of Christ, that you have to be able to choose for yourself, and that can only happen in a land of liberty. When we move into the communist state, you will not be able to bow and be able to pray to Christ. The state will basically say, you can do that over in a corner when we don't see you, but you dare not bow to anybody but the state. Because that's how ruthless and that's how totalitarian statist governments are. So, putting all this into perspective, as we've kind of gone through this, you know, you'll find that there are parts of this I'm going, what's Madison doing here? I realize that he is the epitome of a debater. When somebody gets up and debates both sides of the subject all on their own, instead of actually having one person take one side and the other person taking another side, Madison's actually taking both sides, so that he can put it all on the table to say, okay, here's your argument. And then he basically puts holes in it and proves that it is a failed argument. And that's what I'm really discovering this one time. And so you're kind of witnessing my, oh my gosh, look at what he's done. And look at how he's just set this up. I mean, he's even fooled me in some context. But I am telling you that this document, for some reason, right, wrong, or indifferent, I actually marginalized, because I didn't look at this as an official document, as Madison's official capacity, because I know Madison has opinions. And when you read his notes on the convention of the Constitution, you will realize that, you know, he's just kind of, you know, putting things out there as objective, but he does still place his bias and spin on what he perceived as what he heard and how people were reacting. And so, you know, that's one of the dangers in going into personal documents, because they do possess, they do contain biases, views, and or opinions, which is why I've always tried to avoid them. I'm not avoiding this document anymore, because this document actually, as far as I'm concerned, is the wholesale document that emphatically supports that we must interpose. We must exercise republic review as it is documented. The sadness is that Madison and Jefferson never really documented what they were going to do and the plan forward and how they were going to do it. They just basically called on the states to join them in interposition, but they never told them how and what that interposition would be. Republic review does that. And I would challenge you to actually go through that. When we go through Republic Review, after we get through all of this, and after we go through a few interviews with Doug Gibbs, hopefully we'll have John Gentry back and a few other people, but we're going to go through Republic Review so that you can actually listen, one, to the argument and one, to the process, how it actually flows, how it starts with one state and how it builds as states start joining in creating a union amongst the union in defending their compact, which is absolutely legitimate under compact law or contract law. Anyway, with that, Red Pill Expo is going to be at Lafayette, Louisiana. Please let your legislators know that they will be able to have free admission to the event, not to the VIP stuff and everything else. But with that, I also want to tell you that Timber Nation, we'll come back after the hour, and I just want to promote Timber Nation, and then we'll get into notes on nullification. We'll be right back after this. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so Timber Nation, I just want you to, if you're looking for good quality, solid, hardwood furniture, when I say hardwood, walnut, oak, maple, I don't know if they do hickory. I know that's really hardwood. But if you want a good quality hardwood, they'll probably do hickory. You have to pay more. And like if you want walnut, it's going to cost you more money because walnut is more expensive per board foot or what have you. And we'll go to timbernation.com and just look at the 2-inch solid wood shelves that they use. 2 inches. If you're looking for something that is designed to last, something you can give to your kids, something that becomes an heirloom of quality. Now, it may not have the, you know, some of the old antiquity designs of quality and craftsmanship where these guys used to make, you know, faces and drawings and artwork carved into the wood or into the trim. And it may not be that. But it is quality wood. If you're looking for a solid, functional desk, if you're looking for a audio rack or storage shelves or what have you, if you want good quality, I mean, if particle board and veneer and or wood-like simulated paper veneer is okay, well, all right, but that's something that will break up, it won't last, and it is not designed to last. This stuff is designed to last. And so I'm plugging these guys. They're not paying me a penny. I actually went, because we've been looking for something just like this. Back in the day, we actually found a decent quality furniture for audio systems, and it was out of Chicago, and I'm not going to mention the name, but it was a compromise because the shell of the cabinet was solid walnut, solid oak, or what have you, but the shelves actually had medium density fiberboard. And the justification, quote unquote, was because fiberboard doesn't resonate or won't vibrate or pick up the airwave tones like regular solid wood would because of the grains and so forth. I don't care. I mean, there are different ways of getting away from that. When you buy anything with fiberboard or particle board or what have you, it will break. It is far more susceptible to being water damaged, all sorts of problems. Why? Why not get something that you won't have to replace? And I only am stating this because a long, long time ago in a different life, I was in the, I'll just say, the audio industry. I was a vendor and so forth. And one of the things I learned as a young kid, and most guys, if you're a guy and you're listening to this, you understand you get what you pay for. If you go buy something cheap, you'll end up having to replace it. So if you go out and buy a really high-quality amp, that amp will last you for your lifetime. I have amps that I have had now for over 30 years, and they're still, and I can still get them repaired because they don't have integrated circuits and so forth, and I don't want to get into all of this. But what I do want to plug is I want to plug Timber Nation. We're going to be putting in promos into the regular show once a week or once a day, if we can, at least a couple times a week, to help you remember, if you're looking for good quality furnishings for an audio entertainment system or anything like that, check out Timber Nation, okay? And I believe that is it. We can actually go into the notes on nullification. What I want to do is I want to reread 76, because paragraph 76, because that is kind of where we left off. And this is what Madison says. The same zealots may again say, as they do with a like boldness and incongruity, that the government of the United States, which has been so deemed and so called from its birth to the present time, which is organized in the regular forms of representative governments, and like them operates directly on the individuals represented and those whose laws are declared to be the supreme law of the land, with the physical force in the government for executing them, is yet no government but a mere agency, a power of attorney, revocable at the will of any of the parties granting it. That right there is, as far as I'm concerned, the punctuation that Lincoln and what he did in saying you can't secede was wrong. The father of the Constitution, and he said this a few different times in the Federalist Papers, ratification debates, and right here in this document, he has said it a couple of times, that you as a state have the right to put off or alter the government that may be oppressing you. And here he actually clarifies the fact that it's really not a government. It is an agency that's operating on a power of attorney. Okay? So, moving forward, paragraph 77. Strange as it may appear, there are some who maintain these doctrines and hold this language, and what is stranger still, denounce those as heretics and apostates who adhere to the language and tenets of their fathers. And this is done with an exulting question whether every right has not its remedy, and what remedy can be found against federal usurpations other than that of a right in every state to nullify and resist federal acts at its pleasure. Yet it may be safely admitted. Such a sophism, and let me see here. Sophism is something that I don't usually use, and S-O-P-H-I-S-M, sophism, as that by which this inference is assailed, because an unconstitutional law is no law. It is alleged that it may be constitutionally disobeyed by all who think it unconstitutional. The fallacy is so obvious that it can impose on none but the most biased or heedless observers. It makes no distinction where the distinction is obvious and essential between the case of law confessedly unconstitutional and a case turning on a doubt and a divided opinion as to meaning of the Constitution, on a question not whether the Constitution ought not to be obeyed, but on the question, what is the Constitution? And it can be seriously and deliberately maintained that every individual or every subordinate authority or every party to a compact has a right to take for granted that its construction is the infallible one and to act upon it against the construction of others, having an equal right to expound the instrument, nay, against the regular exposition of the constituted authorities with the tacit sanction of the community. Such a doctrine must be seen at once to be subversive of all constitutions, all laws, and all compacts. The provision made by a constitution for its own exposition through its own authorities and forms must prevail whilst the constitution left to itself by those who made it, or until cases arise which justify a resort to ultra-constitutional interpositions. So, folks, we're looking at so many different constitutional violations. What is it going to take for us to recognize we must take the ultra-constitutional tact in interposing or exercising republic review? You get it? So he's actually saying again that, yeah, you can do this, but you have to actually step out. And he's pointed that out already a couple of times. If you nullify, then what goes with that, you must actually leave. So, and this is why I kind of point out to people with Republic Review, the Republic Review doesn't start, you know, taking back the forestry and the lands and all of that until we actually interpose and tell the federal government that they can't do that. And we don't do that until we actually have the necessary majority of the states to do that. I mean, what you would do is if you got Wyoming or South Dakota to start actually kicking out and running out federal enforcement, then you're basically sending them into the lion's den, because there's no way that the federal government is not going to respond and say, we can do these things. Now, you can start telling them that, you know, we rise to you, government. It's almost like telling the child to stop. You better stop while we're getting organized. Because if the child is attuned to the parents and starts noticing that there are parents coming to the table, this is what will happen. As we get to 13 states and probably maybe before or beyond that, the federal government's going to say, okay. So we're behaving a little badly, and what we're going to do is we're going to, you know, do these things, and we're going to offer these amendments so we can do them. That's why 13 is so important. We need to make sure that we get a solid resolve of the states quickly to shut down the federal government's ability to constitutionally empower them to doing these things, okay? So paragraph 80, the main pillar of nullification is the assumption that sovereignty is a unit, at once indivisible and unalienable, that the states therefore individually retain it as they originally held it, and consequently that no portion of it can belong to the United States. But is it not the Constitution itself necessarily the offspring of sovereign authority? What but the highest politic authority, a sovereign authority, can make such a construction or such a constitution? So we're going to read this again, and this is nothing but acronyms if you actually look at the text. If you go to 81 on this document, you'll actually find, wow, it's like acronym with a word here or there. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. Hang in there. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me reread this again, and I hope that my reading this, and it's a struggle, I hope that you at least have the desire to go and read these words yourself and start kind of cleaning this up. I'm going to actually provide a cleaned up copy when I actually have the time. In other words, going in and figuring out what each of these acronyms mean, so when you read it, because easily one could look at the COSTN abbreviation as construction, constitution. Now, typically in this document, it means constitution. But as you go through this, I want to make it simpler so that you're actually seeing the whole word instead of these acronyms that don't exist in today's language. Anyway, but it is not the constitution itself necessarily the offspring of a sovereign authority. What but the highest political authority, a sovereign authority, could make such a constitution? A constitution which makes a government, he calls it an agency as well, a government which makes laws, an agency that makes laws, laws which operate like the laws of other governments by a penal and physical force. In other words, that they can actually, you know, arrest you, force you, or fine you, and those types of things, on the individuals subject to the laws. And finally, declared to be the supreme law of the land. Anything in the Constitution or laws of the individual states notwithstanding. And where does the sovereignty which makes such a constitution reside? It resides not in a single state, but in the people of each of the several states, again, consistent with his statement to Patrick Henry on June 6th of 1788 in the ratification debates. Going on, he says, uniting with those of the others in the express and solemn compact from which forms the Constitution, to the extent of that compact or Constitution. Therefore, the people of the several states must be a sovereign as they are a united people. In like manner, the constitutions of the state, made by the people as separated into states, were made by a sovereign authority, by a sovereignty residing in each of the states to the extent of the objects embraced by their respective constitutions. And if the states be thus sovereign, though shorn of so many of the essential attributes of sovereignty, the United States, by virtue of the sovereign attributes with which they are endowed, may to that extent be sovereign, though destitute of those attributes of which the states are not shorn. Such is the politic system of, or the political system, because it's just P-O-L-I-T, the political system of the United States de jure and de facto. And however, it may be obscured by the ingenuity and technicalities of controversial commentators, its true character will be sustained by an appeal to the law and the testimony of the fundamental character, whereas a system formed by the people as one community would, on its dissolution, throw people into a state. A just inference from a survey of this political system is that it is a division and distribution of political power nowhere else found on a nondescript to be tested and experienced by itself alone, and that it happily illustrates the diversified moderations of which the representative principle of republicanism is susceptible with a view to the conditions, options, and habits of the particular communities. Paragraph 87. Now, right now we're on page 11, so we're almost done. Paragraph 87 is a long one. That a sovereignty should have been denied to the United States in their united character may well excite wonder when it is recollected that the Constitution which now unites them was announced by the convention which formed it as dividing sovereignty between the Union and the states. In other words, they were dividing sovereignty. This is what I told you. Sovereignty is distributed, and it is distributed by constitutions. If we are to form a government, before we do that, we as individuals are sovereign, and we have to delegate parts of our sovereignty to that government. This is why the Sherman Compromise, or the Connecticut Compromise of American republicanism, recognizes the sovereignty and the importance of representation of sovereigns. This is a land of republicanism, of sovereignty. This is why we have bicameral legislative bodies. The counties are the sovereigns in states, and therefore the counties must be in an American republicanism form of government. They must have representation in the state legislature, which is the state senate. However, you have been duped and you have been coerced and convinced that we are a democracy or a sovereign of people only, and that only we get representation. And in so doing, you've allowed a mob rule mentality to be instituted in this American Republican form of government. This is why we can see how things are shifting to mob rule, which ultimately means that we have shifted into a democracy and not a Republican form of government. And what they did was, Madison has never gone into this level of clarity that I've just given you regarding the importance of sovereignty and republicanism and how they are entwined as we have, because he's clearly stating that we're dividing sovereignty every time we created the next level of government. When we created the states, that created a new level of sovereignty on top of our counties. And then when we created the general government to provide certain roles, responsibilities, and we granted them powers to do those things, then we've created another sovereignty. So we keep on distributing some sovereignty up, but in essence, in these constitutions, we reserve all the sovereign or all other powers not delegated to ourselves. That's what the whole 10th Amendment means, is that the sovereignty at the lower levels of government still possesses all the other powers. Until and when this people actually delegate those powers. So states have been exercising unconstitutional powers because they have used the mandates by the federal government to justify their actions. Let me get back into this and let me start over again. 87. This is 87. That a sovereignty should have been denied. Okay, that a sovereignty should have been denied to the states in their united character may well excite wonder when it is recollected that the Constitution, which now unites them, was announced by the convention which formed it as dividing sovereignty between the Union and the states. See the letter of President Washington of the convention to the old Congress, that it was presented under that view by contemporary expositions, and I don't recommending to it the ratifying authorities. See Federation and other proofs that it is proved to have been so understood by the language which has been applied to it constantly and notoriously, that this has been the doctrine and language until a very late date, even by those who now take the lead in making a denial of it the basis of the novel notion of nullification. So similar is the sovereignty in the United States to the thoughts and views and opinions, even its polemic adversaries, that Mr. Rowan, in his elaborate speech in support of the indivisibility of sovereignty, relapsed before the conclusion of his argument into the idea that sovereignty was partly in the Union, partly in the states. See his speech in the Richmond Inquirer of whatever, other champions of the rights of states, among them Mr. J. N., and I don't know who that is, Mr. Jackson maybe, might be appealed to as bearing testimony to the sovereignty of the United States. If Burr had been convicted of acts defined to be treason, Aaron Burr, or, well, it was the Burr that shot Hamilton, I'm bad with names, which it is allowed to be committed only against a sovereign authority, who would then have pleaded the want of sovereignty in the United States. If there were no sovereignty in the U.S., whether the crimes denominated treason not to be committed without falling within the jurisdiction of the states and consequently with impunity. So he's kind of pointing to the fact that because we have identified treason as a fundamental law and allowing the federal government to determine the punishment and the crime and defining the crime, then what we have now is we actually have, and we have created, and forgive me for this pause, because this is where the sovereign citizen movement really, you know, loses their argument. They actually did create the U.S. citizen in this Constitution, because nobody could commit treason. And so the federal government not only exerted its sovereignty, and I never looked at it this way until he actually kind of married this in here for me, that when you look at treason itself, because they declared jurisdiction over any citizen of any state that was abroad on the high seas or in foreign lands, if they were called, they were arrested, or it was asserted that they had committed a crime. I've got to get my language right here. That bottom line, the United States would have jurisdiction over any and all U.S. citizens who have been accused of those crimes. Now, treason is the one thing that any U.S. citizen can't do, or they will be punished based on the Constitution. Sorry we have to end it at this point, but I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And we're going to get straight into this when we get into our next episode. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process.
This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.